Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning for this important event. First item of business is please turn off your cell phones and don't just put them on vibrate, but turn them off because they interfere with our sound system. Canon Andrew White is a canon of the Anglican Church. He's been the partner of USIP for several years, going back to 2002. We worked together initially in supporting the Alexandria process in Israel-Palestine. Andrew was the key organizer of the Alexandria conference in January of 2002 in Alexandria, Egypt, and has been the mainstay along with Israeli and Palestinian partners since the initial meeting in 2002. At that time, he was director of international peacemaking for Coventry Cathedral. USIP has been the principal funder of the Alexandria process since 2002, and the purpose of that process was the creation of a religious constituency for peace among Israelis and Palestinians. And throughout this process, Andrew has maintained a remarkable reputation among both Israelis and Palestinians as being even-handed and being equally supportive of the interests of both. Andrew has been involved in Iraq since 1998. We started partnering with him in Iraq after the invasion, and Andrew, with our support, helped create the Iraqi Institute of Peace, whose name sounds familiar. And subsequently, we have partnered with him in the creation of the Iraqi Interreligious Congress. This is really Andrew's creation and a remarkable creation. He's done all this in his current incarnation as president of the Foundation for Relief and Reconciliation in the Middle East. And in this process, Andrew has really done remarkable, even heroic work in bringing together religious leaders and building a constituency for peace among religious leaders in all faith traditions. And he'll describe those activities this morning. But before I turn over the microphone to Andrew, I just want to share one little story that illustrates both how Andrew operates and how effective he is. Several years ago, we were driving together on the West Bank, and Andrew was putting together a conference in Cairo, principally for Palestinian Muslims, to try to bring those who had links to more militant organizations together with the peace community. Very important gathering. This was on a Wednesday. The conference was to start on Sunday. The financing hadn't been adequately finalized. Yasser Arafat had not approved the Palestinian participants yet. The Israelis had not given permission for them to cross into Jordan. There were a whole range of uncertainties. Transport from Amman to Cairo was uncertain. I said, Andrew, you can't possibly continue with this program. This is Wednesday. The Cairo conference is to open on Sunday. You've got so many uncertainties, it just can't possibly happen. And of course it happened, and it was a great success. He does that time and time again, and he's done that in Israel, Palestine, and he's done it in Iraq. So let me turn over to Andrew.
Well, it's wonderful to be here, and it's wonderful to be with so many people I recognize, not least friends from Baghdad. Thank you so much for coming here this morning. What David Smock said as an introduction is very true. We have partnered with USIP for a long time in quite an incredible way, and I really trust USIP more than any other organization. It's wonderful that you're here, Your Excellency. It's a great honor to have the Ambassador of Iraq with us this morning. And I need to be perfectly honest with you. I love Iraq. I love Iraq more than any other place in the world. And at the moment, I'm very excited because I'm going back tonight. And I have been out of Iraq for 2 weeks now, and that is a long time for me. I love being there in Iraq. I will tell you what I do. I have four different jobs. One is I deal with religious sectarianism for DOD. So even though I'm English, I'm more American than English. I believe in America, and I'm so grateful that America has partnered with us. I've just come this morning from a meeting with Gordon, England, and it was very, very positive. The next thing I deal with is hostage negotiations, and that's difficult, but I work on that issue, particularly working with the Iraqi government. And the third and fourth issues I deal with are God. I do God on Saturday and Sunday. I have my Iraqi church in Haifa Street, which is, frankly speaking, the best church I've ever had. It's all Iraqi. We have 1,500 people, and they are my inspiration. I love them so much. And our services are all in Arabic and Aramaic, and they're just outstanding. On Sundays, I look after the chaplaincy of the Episcopal Church in the International Zone, and it's great to see several of you here this morning who have been members of that congregation. I need to be completely honest with you now and say I refer to it as the boring church, because the Protestant service, which happens earlier, is actually more enjoyable. But I've got a kind of a deal with the Protestant chaplain that we switch over regularly. So he comes and does the boring service, and I go and do the good one. And it works very well like that. So I have been working in Iraq for over 10 years. And the invasion of 2003 is often commented on so negatively. People do not understand what took place and what happened. And so often people come to me and say, how on earth could you have supported the war? And I have to admit that quite clearly I did. I want to give you just one story of my life in Iraq before the war. I was in Iraq for 5 years before the war. And often people say how wonderful it was and how liberated it was. It was a load of rubbish. Iraq before the war was totally oppressive. There was absolutely no freedom. And it was frightening. One night, my Mukhabarat man came to me and said to me, Abuna Andrew, wonderful news. Tonight, you're going to have a very important dinner. I said, who with? He wouldn't tell me. I said, well, where is it? Is it at the hunting club? And he said, yes, at the hunting club. So I said, who is it with? I said to him, is it with Uday or Rose? And he said, it's with both. So I told him I wasn't going. So he responded by crying. He said, if you do not go, they will kill me and my family. So I went and had the worst dinner party of my life. And that was the nature of the regime before. Things are terrible now. I can't pretend they're all right. I live in a trailer now in the green zone. I've lived in various other places before. I lived in Karada at first, and then I lived in Kardemir. I actually lived in Wafa Arabe's house, and it was a wonderful house on the Tigris River, and it was great until the rockets started coming over from Ardemir opposite. And then they insisted I moved into the green zone. And I first of all lived in ocean cliffs in Baghdad. There's no ocean, no cliffs. It's an underground car park. And I lived in a little plastic trailer in the underground car park. And I went to the restrooms, and they were all named after Oxford and Cambridge colleges. So I went to look for my college, which was a Cambridge college, the better of the two universities. And I saw it was for women only, Clare College, Cambridge. And I thought to myself, oh dear, what am I going to do now? So I went next door, and it was an Oxford college. It was All Souls Oxford. But somebody had crossed out All Souls Oxford and put Trent Polytechnic, which is probably the worst college in England. So it was okay. Immediately after the war, I said it's imperative that we actually start working on the process of reconciliation with some of the religious leaders. And I knew many of them already. I had brought some of them over here to America. We had met with Billy Graham. We had met with Jimmy Carter, if we're allowed to mention that. And it was quite interesting. The fact was that I knew these people very well, both Sunni and Shia. And we started working with these people. And in the beginning of 2004, we had a very big meeting. Last night, I had dinner sitting next to a guy who used to be in Iraq with us called Paul Bremer. And I remember going to Ambassador Bremer and saying to him, we have got to start working with the religious leaders. If we do not, we will have a huge religious insurgency on our hands. He said, don't worry about that. This is a secular country. It's not religious. A few months later, he came back to me and said, you were right. Religion seems to be rising its head. And the fact is, there is no secular country in the Middle East. None at all. And the issue that we are facing is how do we continue to work with the religious leadership of a nation which is in turmoil. And there have been times which have been difficult and times which have been good. And we have got together at all levels various religious leaders, both Sunni and Shia, Kurdish as well, mixture of Kurds, Christians, Yazidis, Turkmen, Mandean. And in 2004, we had a very important meeting. We held it at the Babylon Hotel, just over the bridge. And we had there Wafa al-Rubay is one of the chairmen with Ayatollah Hussein al-Salah from the Shia and Abdul Qadir al-Ani from the Sunni. And that was really the beginning of what we called first the Iraqi Center of Dialogue, Reconciliation and Peace, and later the Iraqi Institute of Peace. From a lot of this period, our biggest partner was the USIP. Without them, we could not have done the work that we did. And at that time, the chief of party in Iraq was Ahed the Coin, and she was outstanding. And we really did a huge amount with her. Over the years, we have continued to work, and at times it's been very positive, and other times it's been so difficult. David Smock was able to tell you of a difficult week in Palestine in the West Bank. The most difficult week I've ever had in the West Bank does not compare to the easiest week in Baghdad. And people often say about television doesn't really show the truth. And the truth is that what we see on television from Iraq is often not real. It's at least 100 times worse. And what we have got to recognize is that the journalists who are there have actually taken huge risks for being there. And it's easy for us to complain about news, but how do we get news? We get news by people being on the ground, and both the foreign journalists and the Iraqi journalists have both been killed for the sake of news. So we must not forget that. People condemn a lot of what has happened in Iraq, and they condemn the Iraqi government as well. And they condemn so much of what is happening. It's very easy to do that from a distance. And here in this room today, we have so many people who have been there with us. And you know as well as I do that it's not easy to actually give it answers and suggestions and solutions and even perceive exactly what's going to happen when you've been there, when you know what the situation is. Yet, despite all the difficulties in Iraq, I'm not without hope. Iraq is, as people, are some of the most intelligent, brilliant people I've ever met anywhere in the world. Iraq as a nation has so much going for it. And I believe in Iraq. And democracy was not established overnight here in America or in Britain. How can we expect democracy to be achieved and the nation of Iraq to be running perfectly in 5 years? It doesn't work like that. It needs time. It needs time to recover from the pain and the atrocities that it has been through. And the atrocities and the suffering that Iraq has endured is like nothing I have ever seen anywhere else in the world, and I don't hang out in nice places. I spend most of my time in bad places. But what Iraq has suffered is just incredibly awful. And we have got to believe that Iraq can be different. We have got to believe that Iraq is an incredible nation. That even the leadership of Iraq is amazing. I told you at the beginning that I have, I do God at the weekends. That I have a church, an Iraqi church. I only had that Iraqi church. And I only get to that Iraqi church because of the Iraqi government. I travel with Muwaffaq al-Rubey, his security, his PSDs. The government has enabled me to continue my church. For a while I used to meet in the Prime Minister's office. And it's very easy for us just to condemn everything about Iraq. But in the care of my church, I have seen a different side of the Iraqi government. And I have seen a side that I believe in. So many Christians have fled from Iraq, and many have gone to the Kurdish areas. And I'm very disappointed to hear negative comments by people about the Kurdish areas, because I do not experience that negativity. Kurdistan is an amazing area of the world. Not only is it one of the most beautiful areas of the world, it is at peace. And the Kurdish areas have done a huge amount to actually accept in the Christian minorities and to support the Christians and to help them. So I will not allow people to say that Iraq does not care about its Christians. It does. And we have had nothing but endless support, both in the Kurdish areas and in Iraq itself. Things are difficult, really difficult. It's horrendous that most Christians have had to leave Al-Dura. But it is predominantly from people outside of Iraq. And we have to accept that so much of the violence and so much of the atrocities which have been committed by non-Iraqis, whether you like it or not. So, at the moment, we have something called the Iraqi Religious Congress and the Iraqi Interreligious Initiatives. And we brought together the accord that we had from our original meeting in 2004 with our 2007 meetings in Baghdad at the Al-Rashid, with the work of the Mecca Accord with Sheikh Zuhairi. So we all work together. I want to tell you something that I heard from one of my colleagues last night. Who was it? Was it Pete or Samir? Or somebody was talking about our recent meetings in Cairo. And we had there leading religious figures from the Shia and Sunni community. And I was told just last night that they were on a bus together and they were singing each other's songs. So the Sunni was singing the Shia songs and the Shia were singing the Sunni songs, and they were having a competition to see who was best at the other's songs. That actually gives me hope. And since that meeting, we have met on many occasions together. We met recently in Copenhagen, and it was a difficult week when we met. It was a week when the cartoons of Muhammad in some of the Danish papers came up again. And yet we had key people there with us. And we didn't just have Shia and Sunni, we had Mandean, Yazidi, Turkmen, Christian, all together in that one place. And we didn't just have religious leaders, we also had political leaders. We had people like Muwaffaq al-Rubai with us, and Wujdan Mikhail Salim. And these are our close colleagues. These are the people we trust in. So whatever you might see on the media and the perceptions of everything being terrible, there is hope, because these people are truly wonderful people. And these people are not just my friends. They're my colleagues. They're the people we work with But give us a little time. It can't all be done in a day. And when change does happen, believe that it happens. And it's wonderful that organizations like USIP are, should I say, the organization of USIP is still there. Most have left. Most have run away. It got too dangerous, so almost every NGO left Iraq. But they have been there continually, working with a wide variety of people to bring about difference. And the work that we do with the DoD, Department of Defense, is incredible. They are so supportive. And we take very seriously the participation with them. And the fact is, if things are bad and I need advice, I don't phone my bishop. He's got no idea. I don't phone the Archbishop of Canterbury. I phone the Office of White House Liaison at the Pentagon. And they help me. And they work with us. And I trust them. So it might seem rather bizarre. Here is this man of the cloth who believed in war, who believes in Iraq, who loves the Pentagon, and who thinks your SIP is wonderful. But that is the reality of Iraq. It is not normality. If you think that everything is easy and normal and perfect in Iraq, you are seriously mistaken. Yes, we as a coalition have made major mistakes in Iraq. But we have to put those mistakes behind us, and we have to move forward. We have a choice. Either we stay where we are, or we try and move forward. And to move forward, I'm afraid you've got to be there. You can have as many meetings as you like outside, and often we do need to meet outside to bring people together. But you also need to be there. And if you are there in Iraq, you too will find that the Iraqi people are the most amazing people in the world. And they are people that I totally and utterly trust. And they are people I love working with and can work with. And I'm not just saying it because the ambassador is sitting there. I truly believe it, and I truly look forward to returning to Iraq tonight. Not just because Masghouf and Uzi are the best foods you can possibly eat. In our camp, the food is the worst food you can possibly eat. But we have got to really believe in what we are doing, that a difference can come. And we've got to believe that religion can make a difference. You see, it was Archbishop William Temple who said, when religion goes wrong, it goes very wrong. And religion has gone very wrong in Iraq. Religion has gone very wrong in many places because religion tends to do that. And people sit down with me and they say, surely it's all about Islam, isn't it? It's all Islam going wrong. And I tell people quite openly that Christianity has killed more people than Islam has killed. And people look at you in amazement. And you can name countless times, one after another, of what Christianity has done. My experience of Islam in Iraq is that we can work with some of the most incredible people ever. But I'm not just talking about this work being nice people sitting together drinking cups of tea and eating smoked salmon bagels. You know, the people we often have to work with are very, very difficult. I said earlier that I divide the world into bad guys and really bad guys. And when I look around the table sometimes, I see really, really bad guys. And if we want to stop violence, if we want to be serious about working for peace, we can't just work with nice people. We have to work with difficult people. And around the table, I will see people like Salah Obeidi from Mahdi Army, who we work very closely with. Because if we want to seriously work at the reduction of violence, we have to work with these people. And when we work with these people and we bring both sides together and they hear each other's stories, they're no longer enemies. The night before last, I was working a lot of the night on a fatwa, a joint Shia Sunni fatwa, which is coming out very soon. It's the top Shia and Sunni religious leaders speaking out totally against all suicide bombings, talking out against violence, talking out against killing the other. This fatwa will come from some people who are not very nice. That's what gives me hope. We have to work with some of these bad people. And I'm so grateful and thankful that some of the people who have been my real mentors in life are people like the National Security Advisor of Iraq, Muammar al-Rubaid. And I can go and see him at any time. I can phone him at any time and talk through issues. And he doesn't just care about our work to reduce violence. He also cares about my church and my people, which are all Iraqi. I'm the only non-Iraqi. Ambassador, one thing I want is an Iraqi passport. And I've been asking for it for a long time. You know, these Iraqis, they come to Britain, 5 years later they get a passport. I've been there 10 years.
There is an initiation ceremony.
Okay, I'll go through any ceremony. Any ceremony. So, shall I stop now or continue?
Why don't you stop and we'll open it up for
great.
And if you feel better sitting down, you can do that either way. The microphones are over here to the right, so just line up. And
he used to be one of my flock in Iraq.
I'm Brian Murphy, and I had the very great pleasure of working with Canon White during the period of the CPA and the U.S. Embassy. Andrew, you walk with the angels. You fly with the angels. Thank you. Wanted to ask you, and no disrespect meant of any institution or person, you spoke of the great support you've received from Mr. England, Deputy Secretary of Defense, General Kicklider, who sends his greetings when I saw him last. But what about the Department of State? They're a very key player. And you're laughing, not crying. I'm grateful for that. How can the department assist you more?
You know, when I learned about reconciliation and when I started to do reconciliation, I thought, right, we can go with Shia and Sunni. But then I realized there was a little division between state and DOD. I can't work on that. Nothing I can do there. No comment. I like Ambassador Crocker a lot, and I can work with Ambassador Crocker. I keep as far away from state as possible. Next question, please.
Sir, my name is Faribors Frank Fouladi. I am Muslim and I am a Persian native. I'm Marylander next door to Washington and an American patriot. It's an honor to know you and thank you for supporting the liberation of Iraq. I lived in 7 years in Dubai, and I know how difficult things were in Iraq. Thank you for your support. What we do with Procurement USA Inc. that it is in Maryland, we're trying to export life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. We're looking for an area in Iraq, 800 meter by 800 meter, to model Montgomery County, Maryland, which I think is one of the best form of government there, and develop an area. I was wondering, I've taken three areas, I call them axis of peace, one in Afghanistan, one in Iraq, and one in Palestine. In talking in here other time to Minister Zaid, and he recommended Herat. I was wondering, based on your experience, where do you recommend in Iraq the best place to do this?
Well, it depends whether you want to do it in somewhere which is potentially quite dangerous or somewhere which is safe.
What do you recommend?
I think you should ask the ambassador. I personally think that you should be in Iraq proper.
How about a place that has location? Because some of this, in this project, part of it, we are selling it to the expatriates. Of course, we are securing the 800 meter by 800 meter. So, of course, we are opening it to the public and local jurisdictions so they can copy a good form of the government, which I am a believer in Montgomery County, Maryland. So where, what location do you recommend so I start working on that location?
Nineveh.
Where?
Nineveh. Nineveh.
Where is that?
Nineveh Plains, near Mosul.
Near Mosul.
Would you think that was suitable?
By the way, I am Shiite. My wife is Muslim. And she's also
Sunni.
Sunni. My children are hoping to become Muslim. It is very important. Your diversity, sir, is amazing. God bless you.
I'm a Shia Masihi.
That's a good one. So you think near Mosul is the best place?
Thank you very much indeed.
I appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Evan Anderson. I oversee the U.S.-Iran Initiative at the National Cathedral. And I just want to say first that I really appreciate your sentiment and feelings about the people of Iraq. It's precisely the way that I feel about the people of Iran. I think they're the most gracious and intelligent people I have met. I have not been to Iraq yet, so I can't speak to that. I think a lot of the information that we're getting about Iran's role in the war in Iraq is very skewed. Can you give me your impressions of what you think Iran's role is in Iraq?
It really depends on who you're working with. I think Iran's role can be positive, but I think to a certain extent it's also been negative.
How so?
Well, some of the more Shia extremists have been coming into Iraq and have been supporting some of the insurgency movements, and that's very difficult. And yet, I think we have got to work with Iran, and I think Iran can be positive.
Have you had any engagement with Iranian Shia in leadership?
Yes.
How has that been?
Interesting. Some of them have been outstanding. I mean, some of the people have been truly outstanding. The only problem is I don't like Iranian food.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Daniel Serwer, United States Institute of Peace. Andrew, you said a little, but a very little, about the real content of conflict in Iraq. What's the issue, not only between Shia and Sunni, but among Sunni and among Shia, since a lot of the violence right now is intrasectarian. I wonder if you could give us an idea of what you think is at issue. Is this ancient hatred? Is this all foreigners? Is this current power?
It's to do with fear. Fear of the other. And fear with people who are different. And that can be within your own tribal and religious grouping or outside of it. A lot of it has been fear of the other. People who hold very different opinions and who maybe belong to different groups. And so one of the things we have had to concentrate on is how we work with people from different groups to bring them together. And it's very interesting, when you bring people together, you often find that their stories are actually very similar. And they have all experienced pain. And one of the things which I think we have not succeeded properly in is we need to give people back something. So many people feel that something has been taken from them. And ultimately what has been taken is power. And they need to be given back, whether it's their territory, their property, their money, so that they can feel empowered again. And if you look at the successes there have been amongst the military and places like Al-Amma, a lot of that has been to do with giving people back something to empower them again.
Another
member of my congregation.
On another subject, my name is Mike Hardiman. I'm president of the Andrew White Fan Club, D.C. chapter. Also the Andrew White Book Sales Club. Make sure you get online and purchase his books. During this initiation ceremony, I assume there will be a slaughter of sheep, or probably several sheep, probably a large ceremony.
Careful.
Good, good. I'd like to make sure that I'm invited, as well as others in the room here. Thank you.
Ken White, thanks so much for your talk today. I'm Judd Birdsall. I work at the State Department, so I was interested in your answer to the gentleman's question. And I wonder what advice you would have for the State Department so we can have a more constructive role in Iraq in terms of bringing religious groups together for the sake of reconciliation. Anything.
I should be asking you that question. How about talking to people at DOD and befriending them and finding out what they have been doing? And the whole issue of religion is absolutely essential. And it's very easy for us to be scared of religion, but we have to engage with religion. At the State Department, you have Ambassador Hanford, who's very, very good.
That's my boss, yeah.
I like him.
Good.
Tell your boss that he's good. In fact, I think he might be the only good person at State Department.
Write that down. Yeah.
Good job. I mentioned him then, wasn't it?
What advice would you have for Ambassador Hanford?
The advice would be seriously to engage with the Office of White House Liaison at the DOD and see how they have managed to take forward these various issues. And one of the things which sometimes frustrates me, I mean every day frustrates me, is that there is no serious State Department partner as regards these issues. I do not even know in the embassy who I should be working with. It changes all the time. But Ambassador Crocker was outstanding. I'm a great believer in him. And Robert Ford is returning to be head of political department at the embassy. He's presently the ambassador in Algeria. And he is another person who's outstanding. So there are people there who do understand, who are willing to engage. But what I would say is engage. That's it.
David Steele, United States Institute of Peace, and I look forward to...
You're coming soon.
I'm leaving today.
Are you?
For Iraq, yes. I will be...
so am I, actually.
Reconciliation facilitator, yeah. Working with U.S. Institute of Peace for a year in Iraq. And I look forward to working with you when I'm there. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, is you've mentioned reconciliation. You've told various stories. You talked about storytelling being important. Haven't heard a lot about what you consider to be fundamental in terms of the whole approach to reconciliation as you're working with religious communities in Iraq. What if you can say more about that?
Yeah, one of the really important things is to understand the community you're dealing with. That's absolutely vital. And so the way we engage and the way we communicate is not Western. So often we're given Western ideals and Western parameters to work in, they do not work. Forget them all. You've got to work with an Iraqi mindset, with an Arab mindset, and you've got to engage at that level. Unless you can do that, you're completely and utterly wasting your time. And in doing that, you'll realize that a key thing is relationship. Is actually getting to know people and getting to trust people and to engage with them at a substantive level. And we have got to completely and utterly change the way that we do things. Totally. There's very little that we do right. I've had various peace awards and things in the past, and I've been to various meetings and I've sat down and they've told me what you have to do to get peace with the other. It's all a load of rubbish. So the key thing is you need to understand the context in which you're working. And unless you can work in the Iraqi context, in the Iraqi way, you're wasting your time.
Can you give an example of how you've done that?
Got off your beads with you. And I always have my beads with me. And you've got to be generous. These people are so generous. I have to be really careful because if I see somebody else's beads and I say, I like your beads, they will give them to me. And if somebody says, I like your beads, they expect them. And I just say that as a very small example. And one of the things that we're not good at is that we expect to have instant meetings at set times and set ways and to meet people and to do the business and leave. Forget it. You've got to be prepared to show that you appreciate that person, to love that person, to eat with that person, to give gifts to that person. And then maybe a few weeks later you'll get down to the real business. So our timings in the West are completely and utterly different. You've got to be prepared to invest in people and invest in individuals, get to know them. Then you can take people to others. And it's not going to be words that we as outsiders say that really change the situation. It's not going to getting people to sign up to the right documents. It's going to be getting people to become friends of the other. So you need to know who the other is. And you need to sit down and work out with the individuals who they are afraid of. You need to work out with them what has actually happened to them. And terrible things have happened. And the stories you hear are most unbelievably awful. I shouldn't have done, I'm not going to do this morning, but on Sunday night I was preaching in Kentucky and I told one of the stories of the suffering of my people, and somebody went, run out crying and was sick. So it's very easy for us to think everything's okay and let's just be nice and we can work these things out, and this is my technique. Everything, I've spent a lifetime learning about reconciliation and peacemaking, and it was all totally, utterly a waste of time. Sorry to say that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Wouldn't you agree with that, Catherine? You wouldn't agree.
No.
What do you think?
Of it
has,
I
mean,
I just, some of it has, but there's more to learn.
Have you ever been to Iraq? Come tonight. And see what it's like. You know, one of the things we've got to do is we've got to spend time with the people in context. And unless you spend a lot of time in context, you can't achieve anything.
Ken and White, David Carmel. I got back from Iraq in August, your tour as a detailee to Irmo. And I remember your presence on Sunday morning at our services, our non-denominational service, and how inspirational that was.
The good one, not the boring one.
I think it was the good one. I'm not sure. Yeah. The morning service. But I just want to say I'm so glad I came down here this morning. First of all, because I saw a little interview with you on TV the other day, and it clearly had been edited to make the point that the producers of the show wanted to make. And you have, I think, expressed today how complicated and how difficult the situation is and how it does not lend itself to simple, you know, 25-word explanations, which it seems is what the media wants to present. And I also appreciate your saying how much you love the Iraqis and are looking forward to going back. I have applied for 2 or 3 jobs to go back to Iraq. Everyone thinks I'm crazy. I don't know. The State Department, at the same time that they're saying they can't get anyone to go, my applications have been pending and not responded to. So
funny you should say
I don't know why that
Tom
is.
The alternate room has had that. Yes. As well.
Anyway, I don't have a question, but thank you very much for thank what you're doing. You Safe much. Travels, and hopefully I'll see you again in Baghdad.
Good.
Hi, I'm Maria Jessup. I'm with the Institute of Peace, and I'm working
What's
on.
What's you working?
I'm working in the Education Training Center, and I'm working on education programs for Iraq. And I've just started in December, so I've only had one trip so far and a couple of sessions with Iraqis, which I've enjoyed very much. I wanted to talk
so you
to
you. You were with Zainab.
What's that?
You were with Zainab?
Yeah.
In Rafi?
Yes, I was in Erbil. Yes. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about reconciliation as well, and what role, you talked about power and the importance of giving Iraqis a sense of power again, and the U.S. being arguably the most powerful entity in Iraq, what is the role the U.S. has in giving some of that power and perhaps being an actor in the reconciliation process?
The U.S. has a huge role. The U.S. has the biggest role, I would say, of any outside party. And one of the things the U.S. needs to do is it needs to sit down and spend time learning the Iraqi way. And it needs to engage at a substantive level with the Iraqi government, and it needs to see where they are coming from and needs to empower them. And one of the most important things that America can do and is doing is to help in this whole process of empowerment of Iraq.
Hello, my name is Vanessa Arrington. I work at Search for Common Ground, and we actually met 2 years ago on Easter Day in Baghdad. I was actually working before with the Associated Press, so I interviewed you 2 years ago. It's a pleasure to see you again. I had two questions. I was hoping first you could expand a little bit on some of the players in Iraq. I'm particularly interested in understanding more the mentality of people like Muqtada al-Sadr, where they're coming from, if you think there's validity in what they're doing and how that can be dealt with. Secondly...
Can I sit down?
Yes, certainly. And secondly, I'm wondering from the other side what you think Americans and Brits need to be doing, because I feel like a lot of people here just have forgotten about the war, and I'm curious your perspective on what needs to be done outside of Iraq as well.
They're very key questions. People like Muqtada al-Sadr and the Mahdi group, they're very frustrated that in their feeling Iraq has not been allowed to be Iraq, partly because of the coalition. And they feel that their nation can't really be its own nation until they are given freedom and liberty to do things. And I think that many of them are difficult people, but certainly in the leadership of people like Salah Abedi, I think we can work with, and we have to. We can't just work with people that we find easy and people we agree with all the time. We need to find out directly from them what their issues are and how they can be met, and what we can do to engage with them at the proper level. What was the other question?
Just about kind of the civilians in America and the UK. What if you think there's a role for people to be playing there in terms of, you know, you're saying that you can't just think this is all nice and everything's okay, because it's not.
It's not.
And do you feel that that's a problem?
As regards the role of the civilians, I think they have got to engage seriously on this issue. And frankly speaking, most people can't go there. And it's very difficult to really understand what is happening without going there. But at least they can try and understand in ways like you clearly are trying to understand, and at least they can support organizations like USIP which are working there. And I think that's very key, to actually see how you can support organizations who are working in situ on the ground and who are trying to bring about change. And, you know, I think we've got to find ways in which we can work with the Iraqi government and support them and help them as well.
Thank you. Yes, I have a serious question this time regarding what you brought up about dealing with the Iraqis is just different than the Western mindset. I think that you'll buy off on these two examples. One is setting a time for a meeting. The meeting may be in the afternoon or in the morning. The closest you may get is 2 or 2.5 or 3.
Not in the morning.
What, the next day?
Not in the morning.
Well, okay.
I've never had a decent meeting with the Iraqis in the morning, have you, Ambassador? Because they work all night.
Okay, well, even actions like getting through the checkpoints, if you have a meeting in the green zone, that could take hours, that kind of thing. So you've got to just be flexible to a degree that's unheard of in the West, and even if you can specify time to 2 or 2.5 or 3, which is 2 or 2:30 or 3, there's no such thing as 11:05 a.m. That doesn't exist. It always finishes with inshallah, which is if God wills it, which is you have to understand the centrality of religion to everything that's done in Iraq. The other thing is, we have in the West, we have hello, how are you? Yes, I'm fine. No. If you ask a question to an Iraqi, really any Arab in my experience, you have to be prepared to listen to the entire answer. The answer may be 15 seconds or it may be 5 minutes, but this is part of showing respect for these things. And so those are just two examples backing up what you said before. And I was in Iraq for 26 months, so I have a lot of firsthand experience with this, although not as much as you, Andrew.
Hi, I'm Jackie Wilson, also with USIP. And most recently, I've had the opportunity to work with Iraqi youth, and I understood from some press reports...
Iraqi youth in Iraq or Iraqi youth here?
Iraqi youth from Iraq. We actually worked with them in northern India, but they are Iraqi youth from Iraq. And I understood from some press reports that the youth are becoming disenchanted or losing faith, so to speak, in their religious leaders, in part because the youth have suffered tremendously, of course, in terms of being mobilized by various groups. So I wondered whether there are any initiatives in Iraq from the religious sector to reach out and regain the trust of the youth.
I saw some of these reports as well. My experience with young people in Iraq has not been what I saw in the media. But as regards real experience, I have to confess that the majority of my experience with young people is with my young people from the church. And I spend a lot of time with them because I really believe that they are the future of the nation. And I spend a lot of time with various ministers' children as well. But they're not, as it were, the normal Iraqis from the street. Just to give you a little interesting story, on Wednesday afternoons, I usually meet with my young people at the Al-Rashid. And a few weeks ago, they said to me, Abuna, we want to play football today. I said, who are you playing football with? They said, well, you'll be in goal and we'll play the Muslims. I said, that's not really reconciliation, but we won 8-1.
Mabruk.
Hi, Andrew. My name is Susan Hayward. I'm here at the U.S. Institute of Peace working with David Smock. I have two questions for you. First, thanks for joining us today. It's wonderful to hear your stories and your opinions. My first question is, you spoke about bringing religious leaders and Iraqi politicians together. You also spoke about how the various bureaus within the U.S. government see religious leaders as partners. And I wonder if you can elaborate a little bit more on how Iraqi politicians are engaging with religious leaders and the degree to which they see them as partners in building democracy and peace and good governance.
One of the major issues that we were looking at when we were in Copenhagen with members of the Iraq government was whether religion should advise or supervise. And we went very much with the line that we need to get to the position of religion advising rather than supervising.
Can you tell a little bit more about the difference between those two?
Well, one is basically telling politicians what they should be doing, and the other one is just giving them advice. And it was very interesting to see how the religious leaders do very firmly think they have an advisory role. It's rather difficult, and that's one of the issues which is going to take a lot of... The religious leaders really think they have a supervisory role, and it's quite difficult to get them to come to the position that they have an advisory role. And the way we can really do that is by some of the religious leaders who very much take the line that religion has an advisory rather than a supervisory role, coming very much on board and working with us on this issue, and that's what they're doing.
Okay. My second question is, I know you work with Iraqi ulama who are expatriates in neighboring countries, and I wonder to what extent they're replicating some of the work with intra and inter-sectarian reconciliation with religious leaders in their host countries with ulama who are native to those countries.
Well, to be quite honest, I used to work a lot with the Iraqis outside their own countries, but nowadays I'm so much in Iraq, I don't really have the time and energy to put into external Iraqi issues. It is very difficult. And one of my concerns has been how we can get Iraqis outside of Iraq to really play a role in Iraq and to be supportive of the change in Iraq and to be supportive of the government in Iraq.
Thank you.
Andrew, it's such a blessing to see you again. But it's time somebody stood up for that boring congregation in Iraq. And that would be me.
That used to be part of.
For those of you who don't know, I'm Barbara Vaughn, and I did work with Andrew for a couple of years in Baghdad as a lay leader in the boring congregation. Yeah, in the boring service. Andrew, my question is, getting back to someone else's reference about, you know, the civilian population here and in the UK and in other countries, how can we get the religious institutions, churches, synagogues, mosques here involved in and supportive of the reconciliation work you and others are trying to do?
Well, my experience is that whenever I meet with them and tell them firsthand what has happened and what is happening, they always are supportive. Unless you meet with them personally, they don't really understand.
And so our thing here is we need to clone you.
Yes.
To make this work. Has it been...
You should know, Barbara, everything. You've been there long enough.
I was there long enough, yes.
And my real experiences, both in mosques, synagogues, and churches, when you really engage with them, they will come forward and support.
So the difficult thing then is to find enough people who can speak and can share the experience.
And that's why the work of groups like USIP is so important. Because it is a base on the ground which has people there doing the work.
That can then bring it back here and share it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Would you say so, David?
Well, I think we have greater knowledge and familiarity and credibility because we are on the ground.
Yes.
Make all the difference. And our work with the Iraq Study Group and the fact that we were the facilitators
yes.
of that process and continue to keep that expert group together to reflect on U.S. policy and development in Iraq.
Canon White, I'm actually here as a citizen who is very concerned about our policy. And what I'm wondering about, and I'm glad to have the chance to ask you, is going forward, I hear you talking about empowerment and about advising versus supervising. And so I'm wondering, what going forward, what should be the role of the U.S. military in the next administration? You know, there may be a change or there may not be a change depending upon who's elected. And, you know, a lot of people who think that our military shouldn't be there still worry, well, if we're not, does that mean there will be more of a bloodbath? I mean, what
there
do you...
There could be blood flowing in the streets. And I think what is key is that our countries must sufficiently engage with the Iraqi government and the Iraqi leadership. Got to take direction from there.
And what do you think they will tell the next president? I mean, will that?
Ask the ambassador.
That's. I would like to. I mean, the ambassador might be too diplomatic to answer the question.
Not really, but this is not my lecture. I came here to listen to it. But I think what Canon White said was absolutely right. Had this been done from the beginning, we would not have been where we are now.
Yeah.
I was a member of the governing council. It was very difficult for us to deal with the CPA, because they came blinkers like that.
Yeah.
And they were going to do it their way. And they failed to listen. And we paid the price.
Yeah.
As a result, we have a lot of problems. That's not the only reason for our problems, I must say. But that complicated our problems.
Mm-hmm.
They were solving them.
Seriously complicated.
Seriously complicated. But now I believe Americans have learned a great deal. They have changed their way to an extent. But that level of engagement has to be right. In certain circumstances, in certain things, we actually need the push and the nudge from our American partners.
Mm-hmm.
Because things are lockjammed and need to be pushed. We need pressure. But we don't need dictation. That's the distinction.
But I mean, if you had a lot of reconciliation and conciliators as opposed to soldiers, do you think going forward that would?
In order for the conciliation, Karen White mentioned a key word, fear.
Mm.
Unless you remove or reduce the fear, you cannot have reconciliation. And you can only reduce the fear when there is a minimum level of security.
Yeah.
For that, we need a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to see military not just as force, but as peacemakers.
Mm-hmm.
And in our relationship with DoD, we are really beginning to see how the military can be peacemakers, not just war makers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful to the work and support of General Petraeus. He understands these issues. He really understands these issues. And somebody like that we can work with.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Canon White, for your wonderful work. I'm Steve Sawmill. I coordinate an interfaith group in the D.C. area. Interesting that I would follow the last questioner because it's a very smooth segue. Congratulations at the fatwa. Sounds like it's very soon to be signed. I did get the impression it would be coming soon. Is that correct?
Very soon.
Very soon.
Yeah.
That's momentous. And my question is, since you coordinate with a White House Office of Liaison in the Pentagon, that makes me think of the presidential candidates coming up. And I'm wondering, have you had any contact with any of the three foreign security, national security staffs of any of those candidates? That's one. And anything you could say about that. And following up on the last questioner, if one of the two Democrats becomes president, what is your view about the speed of withdrawal of American troops?
I do know two of the candidates quite well. One of them comes to Iraq regularly, so I trust him. As regards the other two, I think we have got to engage very seriously with the Iraqis. As regards withdrawal, I don't think there should be any withdrawal without the Iraqis giving direction. And with the Iraqis giving direction, it should happen. So what I'm saying is that we have got to go back to Iraq again. We can't just talk about these issues and make all these decisions without engaging with the nation itself. We have to. It's imperative. Unless we engage seriously with the nation, we're going to make big mistakes. So it doesn't really answer your question, because I don't have a clear answer. But what I would say again is we must go back to the Iraqis. And the Iraqis have given very clear direction about these issues, and they're right.
Thank you very much.
We'll take this as the last question.
Okay. Diane Perlman. I'm a clinical and political psychologist and also a member of Transcend, Conflict Transformation Network. And this actually relates to the last two questions about withdrawal and the Iraqis and fear. Well, first of all, I agree with you that Iraqi, according to principles of conflict transformation and some that I've worked on with Richard Rubinstein and Johann Geltung, that the Iraqis need to make the decisions themselves and figure out what their needs are, but they can't do it as long as there's an occupation, that it splits all the groups in two and it's hard for them to figure things out.
Depends what you mean by an occupation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, okay. So
Iraq runs Iraq, not the coalition. Iraq has mm-hmm. a sovereign government, and that government needs to be allowed to be sovereign.
Right. No, totally. But also, you talked about that the military, that the soldiers should be involved in peacemaking, and it seems like we're in a militaristic, physical, violent force paradigm, like when they stand up, we'll stand down, and a lot of coercive techniques, you know, strategies, rather than, say, using conflict transformation strategies or working out certain arrangements between central and regional authority arrangements, and or like you said, giving them back their power, whether it's money, power, that there are a lot of, that the military aren't specifically trained to do certain things, and they're even sort of deeper and more complex than diplomacy and negotiation, but I think there are strategies that exist, and maybe bringing in others besides the U.S. forces, maybe from members of Arab countries to manage. So do you have any other, any thoughts, say, about more creative ways to reduce the violence and transform?
Well, I think we have got to be very careful about bringing in other Arab parties. Mm-hmm. Some of the complexities that we face now in Iraq are caused by other Arab nations. And so we have to be very aware. I know it might sound good on paper that we're working with other Arab nations, but frankly speaking, having worked in much of the Middle East, the Iraqis are far more intelligent than most other Arab nations. I'm not just saying that to be nice to the Iraqis, but the Iraqis really are. And we have to look for Iraqi solutions. We have to look for Iraqi understanding, Iraqi advice, and we need to take that very seriously.
It's always a pleasure and stimulating for Andrew to visit us here and talk about his work and how we can collaborate in the future, and we haven't given Andrew a public platform here before, so it was a particular opportunity and pleasure for us to invite you to come and join us today to hear what he has to say and his analysis of the situation and to share some of the important work that he does. So thank you for joining us. And Andrew, it's been great to have you here.
Thank you very much.